on this edition of Josh Nixon's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Learn what it takes to run an indie wrestling promotion in 2018. All the successes, all the failures, the risks, the injuries, the pain of rebooking guys and finding new guys when wrestlers are in pain and can't make shows or get pulled by other promotions, all that good stuff. As I talk to Limitless Wrestling owner Randy Carver on this edition of Josh Nixon's Punch-Out, which starts now. Hey everyone, it's Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch-Out, back with you once again in your podcasting life. December 14th, by the time you listen to this, the year of our Lord, 2018. Hope you guys are getting your Christmas shopping done, Hanukkah shopping, and even if you're not shopping, hopefully you're having a good day. And thanks for dropping by on this edition of the show. And on this edition, we diverge from the sport of almost kings to the true sport of kings, professional wrestling, for a show I've wanted to do for quite some time, and not necessarily with this person, but one that an idea I've kind of been floating around my head for a while, and it could be part of a series I do. We'll see. But kind of looking at the what it takes to run an indie wrestling promotion in 2018, actually soon to be 2019, I'm fascinated by it. I've been in pro wrestling since I was a kid, and I'm almost going to be only 41 here coming up in less than a month. So I was, classic WWF, very small extent WCW, because we didn't have cable growing up. Once I got cable, I was exposed to ECW, USWA, Smoky Mountain, WCW, and other smaller promotions that had TV through various, when we got our C-band satellite dish, which was a goddamn great moment in my life. Let me tell you that much. Completely changed my life forever. So indie wrestling, of course, going to local shows and all that stuff, it was awesome. And I grew up in a very small town, no stoplights, still no stoplights in Western Maine. And so our kind of exposure was limited. It was, VHS tapes of, a few different WWF shows, the Coliseum video stuff, some events, ones you would just watch over and over and over and over again, much like probably many of you, older folk, so to speak, out there listening right now. And the younger kids, man, you have no idea how well you got it now. So that's how I kind of came up. So, I got involved in indie wrestling. I was a writer in college, sports writer in college, and I wrote a wrestling column and really just always had this kind of like thought in the back of my mind, how do I get involved? And could have been, I had this idea in my head, I could be a broadcaster or do something with, I think the dream's always like do something with WWE. Right. So, when I graduated college, I moved to Portland, Maine, and worked for a professional hockey team there. And on the side, I decided to start getting involved and doing some stuff with a local indie promotion called Eastern Wrestling Alliance. And that's how I kind of got my start in the wrestling business. I was there the better part of 2 years, maybe more like a year and a half. And I did ring announcing. I'm going to talk about this more in the show, but I want to kind of set the table for why you might listen to this. So I used to work in an indie, and then as time went on, I kind of get away from wrestling, got back to it. I was fascinated with the indie scene in like Philadelphia, New Jersey, and that thing back in the early 2000s, when Ring of Honor was running big, New Jersey Pro Wrestling, I believe that was the name. I think it was the original NJPW. I think that is it. The promotion out of New Jersey, some all types of other stuff going on in the Northeast. And then these pockets around the rest of the country, UPW and so on. So, indie wrestling, I've always been fascinated by, and it's really had a nice kind of resurgence in the past few years around the world. And what's fascinating is that they have a lot of challenges in the year coming up ahead, because WWE is signing everyone, and now Ring of Honor signing guys, and MLW and Impact, and the amount of talent is being signed other places that they can't compete. But it's really kind of a fascinating time because you have guys like Joey Janela doing his thing, and you have, it's incredible, right? I don't have to tell you that. We talk about this all the time on the website. So I wanted to actually talk to a guy that has booked an indie promotion and kind of bring it right, all the way back around. Someone that does some so in a small state like Maine. And I say small because it's very small population-wise and with two big kind of population centers, and there's a lot of challenges there. And I recently went to a show for Limitless Wrestling. That's the name of the promotion in Maine, one of the biggest promotions there. And they really, it's like the indie that you would see, that you would expect to see now, a good mix of local guys, but also national acts, for lack of a better term. And I was really fascinated by it. It was a really fun show. They have the promotion's been around for 3 years. They have booked a lot of guys. Chris Hero, Zack Sabre Jr. has been in the car, Cole Cabana, Jordan Grace. Who did I see? So Darby Allin was on the show. Ace Romero was on the show. LAX, Brody King has done a bunch of stuff with them. So they've signed a lot of interesting names to come in, but they've also had obviously their local guys and how they fit in. So I want to kind of understand what it's like running an indie promotion in 2018. Helping me do that is the owner of the promotion, Randy Carver. So he and I hung out for about almost an hour and basically just shot the shit. So even if you're not really interested in like the New England wrestling scene, I think this will be interesting for you if you're into indie wrestling and want to kind of understand how things work. And then also, if you're looking to eventually start your own promotion or book your own thing, Randy's got some tips for you there as well. He's a young guy, but he's doing some really great things. So I invite you to check them out at limitlesswrestling.com. I'm not paid by the promotion. They're not like, employing me in any way. Just, I've been to one show and like, I love their whole vibe and what they're doing. Probably very similar promotions that you are watching right now in your neck of the woods. But, this is a group that's really doing some good things. And I think the lessons you learn here, I try to keep it high level. I think you're really going to enjoy. So I've been talking for about almost 6 minutes. So let's get right into the interview. I think you guys are going to enjoy this. I hope you really do if you're into wrestling. So Randy Carver of Limitless Wrestling coming up right about now. So back in 2001, yours truly, a lot of people don't know this, was a professional wrestling ring announcer. Not a full-time gig by any means, but I did it on the indie scene as fun. I had dreams of becoming the next Jim Ross back in the day and hopefully transitioning to that. But at the time, the only role available to me was to get in the ring and announce the guys as they came in. Did that for about a couple years and then eventually started getting tired of making the drive from Manchester, New Hampshire, up to Portland for basically no money. It was a lot of fun, but ended up getting out of that after a while. And years have passed. The Eastern Wrestling Alliance was a group I worked for at the time. And over the years, wrestling kind of came and gone in the Pine Tree State where I grew up originally. And groups came and went. And then at some point over the last, I'd say, couple of years, I caught wind of this group that was bringing in a new group higher end talent, guys that you and I would go see at the matches, and you'd expect back at PWG or any of these like indie pockets throughout the country. It was like, wow, these guys are coming to Maine. And so I got to know a little bit about the group. And then just a few short weeks ago, I actually made it to my first show for Limitless Wrestling, and their owner, Randy Carver, is on the line right now. And I wanted to talk to Randy about really what it takes to run an indie organization in not only in 2018 and as we're going in 2019, but also in a state that has just 1.3 million people in it, and a lot of the population is in the southern part of the state. So Randy, as I said, is on the other line right now. And Randy, let's see. I always try to start out with a really hardball question, so I guess I'll ask you this. How's your Christmas shopping going?
Oh, man, that is a hard one. Not great. Pretty much just got the jump on it this week, but I've been doing a lot of online ordering, and I did go out on Black Friday. Surprise! It's my first time ever not working in the retail industry, and I actually went out and got some stuff. But I got to do a lot this week. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Any rest? Do you buy wrestling related materials for your immediate family and so on? Do you buy gifts for some of the talent that works for you? What's your list look like?
I do exchange some Christmas cards with some members of the roster and some of our staff, but mostly not a lot of my family or any close friends are really into wrestling, who I buy for at least. I do have a group of a couple dudes who we all do like our own like friend Christmas deal, and we buy some like wrestling gag gifts every year that are funny, but not a ton. I actually have a cousin who is just getting into pro wrestling, so he's getting some Limitless Wrestling DVDs along with his Christmas stuff, so we'll see if he likes that.
Awesome. So you're going to spoil them then the you know, since they, if they watch your product, they're not going to want to watch like WWE or anything like that.
It is definitely something different than what he's seen so far.
That's true. Well, let's get into it a little bit, because in the intro here, which you know, I talked about the EWA and so on. So I want to kind of give the framework for those people listening, because most of our listeners are obviously not going to be from Maine, probably, or New Hampshire or anything right. like that. So I grew up in Maine, Western Maine, around the Oxford Hills area. Went to school at Orono at the University of Maine. So Maine is a you know, physically is a big place, but not a big place population wise. Like I said, it's about, you know, 1.3 million, give or take. Skews a little bit older. A lot of younger people, you know, grow up, go to school, leave the state, work somewhere else. And, you know, most of the population is around the southern part of the state, around the, you know, the Portland, Maine area and so on. Obviously, population in eastern Maine, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But it's a, you know, it's not like a big mecca in terms of like, you know, huge population or anything like that. But they've always had this thing with pro wrestling, you know, WWE, WWF back in the day, WWE always would come to the former Cumberland County Civic Center, now the Cross Insurance Arena, forever do shows there. I remember I went to Hulk Hogan's first show there, back when he was, you know, back in the '80s, and
wow, you know, very cool.
Yeah. So we had terrible seats. We were like, my dad got them for me. We were like down like the first row of the right where the stands start going up. So everyone was standing up. And of course, I'm like, I think like 8, 9 years old, something like that at the time. Of course, I can't see over everyone standing up. And, you know, it was one of those, you know, one of those matches you hear about back in the day. Like, you know, he worked the middle of the card because he had to go do another shot like later that night somewhere else. Yeah. Or, you know, and I think it was the Big Boss Man he was up against. But anyway, I saw a little bit of Hogan come in, a little bit, you know, the body slam. I could see Boss Man's feet going up and down, everyone going crazy. But it was just one of those like, a most kind of like amazing things, right? So anyway, I digress. So and then the Eastern Wrestling Alliance I was talking about, they were around in the late 90s and you know, early 2000s, and people will probably remember them a little bit for, you know, MTV fame. I think it was the I Want to Be a Pro Wrestler or something, that series that they were doing about like I Want to Be or like,
oh yeah, it was True Life.
True Life, yes.
So hard for that. I actually looked for that episode like a week ago because someone didn't believe me that they did something on like Tony Atlas and the company that he was with at the time, like back at that time frame. And that's it's kind of cool, especially for like, I'm sure you and I and anyone who's listening who's like a New England wrestling fan, to kind of find that episode and look back at everyone who, you know, everyone who's involved in that episode. It's just it's very funny reminiscing on the names. And but yeah, they were on True Life, I Want to Be a Pro Wrestler, because they had different. They were with the WWE, and then they were with someone who was training, and then they kind of got the intermediate where it was an independent company that was, you know, moving forward in the state of Maine. So they got a lot of different aspects in that episode.
Yeah. So Josh Shea, who was, you know, an infamous part of that episode, he was the one that I can't remember how I got in contact with him. I think I just emailed into the website, and he was a guy that I talked with and eventually kind of brought me in and did ring announcing for a long time. And then, you know, Eastern was around for a while, and then we were going to start our own group. Myself, Josh A., myself, and this other guy was a referee, Josh Laprell. We're going to start our own group called ACW, if I remember right, American Championship Wrestling. We had a TV taping actually scheduled in Augusta. For January 4th, I think it was like 2000 and I think it was like maybe 2004, 2005. And we had a major, major snowstorm that day, and show got canceled, and we, ended up selling basically all the assets to another group. And they, we ended up making, I think, $125 total on it. Something wow. like that. Yeah. So, and that was my foray in promoting. And then, there was a group out of, Bangor Rampage Pro Wrestling for a while. So, but then, you know, I came across your group. It must've been like in the last year or so, I think I saw a retreat from somebody, and I'm like, Limitless. And I looked into it, I'm like, oh, these guys are out of Portland. So I was kind of curious, like, how did you kind of your history with wrestling in the state, and how you started to get into this side of the business?
So I was attending shows locally for quite some time. When I first started realizing there was independent wrestling, there wasn't much around. There really has never been a ton around in the state of Maine, because, you know, it is so big, but it's very tough to get people to come to a show. So when Rampage was just getting done when I was getting into independent wrestling. So there was two groups around. There was the NWA on Fire, which was a Savoldi's promotion. And there was the NAWA, which then transferred to the IWE, Independent Wrestling Entertainment, which was run by Eric Johnson. So I would primarily attend IWE events because that was what was close to me. I was 45 minutes from their home base in Brewer. So I would make sure that I knew the date every month, and I would beg my mom to take me to the shows, even though it was very she thought it was very grungy and very, you know, different because it was at a bar. You know what I mean? There was a bar attached to it. It was behind a pizza shop. It was not what you see on TV. You know what I mean? So I was attending shows there for quite some time. And then I eventually wanted to figure out a way into the pro wrestling business, but it's very tough to do when there's no wrestling school in the state at that time. And I didn't really know. It's never really been apparent how to really get into the wrestling business without going to a wrestling school, because that's, you know, primarily the one way that you do it. So I had a couple wrestlers who I knew off of the IWE roster that were Johnny Miyagi and Scott Wilde, who are both local to the Massachusetts area. And I would talk to them and just, you know, I would stay after every show and I would help, you know, pick up chairs. And sometimes they would let me help with the ring. And this is 2013, so I'm 15 at the time. And they pull me aside one time and they're just, you know, kind of give me the rundown of like, you know, you can talk to this promoter and you can probably figure out a way to at least get on the ring crew. So then that was, you know, automatically my in. I went to the promoter literally like 5 minutes later and chatted with him about, you know, anything I can do to help or what I needed to do to get involved. So he was actually very gracious with me and was offering, you know, half price training, because they did training seminars before their events, but you know, nothing more than that. So he offered me half off training and said that I could, you know, be on the ring crew, but needed to be there at the beginning of show, stay to the end. And you know, I was super excited, and I actually started training originally because I didn't want to be a wrestler. 100% did not want to be a wrestler. I didn't think I'd be a good wrestler, but again, you know, that's really the only way that I thought that I could get in. So I did that for a few months. That eventually led to ring announcing when their ring announcer was unable to show up. So within 3 months of getting into the business, I was ring announcing on shows, running their YouTube account, doing their social media. And it really just kind of snowballed from there, because there was a lot of creative freedom, even though it was a, you know, a very small company with, you know, limited eyes on it. It was still an outlet to let me, you know, try a bunch of new things that I had never done before for a wrestling company. And kind of understand by the wins and losses that we see with different things, how to do things differently or how to do things better. And that eventually led to just, you know, it gets frustrating, as I'm sure you know, with some smaller, you know, if you're in a smaller independent company and you really think that you know, big things can come out of something and then it gets kiboshed, like, it stinks. So eventually I guess I was just sick of how wrestling was going at the time. And it was kind of a downer to even go to shows. And I was, you know, 2 years into the business at like 17, hating it already. And I'm like, this is absolutely not how it's supposed to be. So it was just a lot of that kind of building up and more motivation to try to do something different. And that's where Limitless kind of popped up.
So you're like, okay, I'm going to start this. I want to start something. Who do you go to in order to, I guess, kind of, you know, even, I guess, did you even be like, should I talk to someone about this first? Or are you just kind of like, fuck it, we're just going to go for it and see what happens?
That was a long process, because I knew, like, I had decided when I was, I guess it was 2014, I had decided at the end of that year that by the end of 2015, I wanted to at least have one show done with the wheels in motion to keep doing more. But you know, you can build contacts for those first couple of years that you're in the business, but it's still like promoting shows is a lot of aspects to it that I'm still learning today. But, you know, I didn't have a ring, I didn't have a sound system, I didn't have a building, I didn't have insurance, I didn't have anything at that point. So, it was essentially just, you know, figuring out, okay, making a list of everything that I needed to get done or needed to have, and then just trying to figure out how attainable everything was. I luckily, you know, one of the most important things is having a ring. I knew a guy who was looking to sell his ring. He didn't sell right off the bat, but he was renting it, you know, a reasonably priced, because I didn't have a lot of money at that point either. You know, I was 17. I was just, I think I just got a car. I didn't have much money coming in whatsoever. So I kind of knew that I was really going to throw myself, if I was going to throw myself into this, I needed to wait a while and not do it right off the bat and have it be bad right off the bat, because that's, you know, entirely not what I was looking for. So it took, I decided in November of 2014 I was going to do it, and it took us till September of 2015 to have our first show. So that time in between was all, you know, getting a hold of people, setting up a building, you know, just getting everything set and making sure, like, I used all graduation money I got from graduating high school to the first show. Like, it was just trying to figure out how to make it work, essentially.
So, okay. So for those that don't know, I kind of explain this, like, the majority of the population of the state is like the southern part of the state, you know, Portland area, but, Eastern Maine. So, Bangor, Brewer, which is where your first show took place. And then obviously the University of Maine is right there as well, which has, you know, about, you know, 10,000-12,000 kids, something like that. But you're drawing, of course, like, you're trying to draw from, like, you know, a lot of the other population pockets in Eastern Maine are, like, you know, 45 minutes, an hour away, something like that. So was your goal to always just try to center this in Eastern Maine, or did you have kind of eyes towards going to the South, so to speak?
I didn't really know at first, because the goal wasn't necessarily like location. It was just more betterment of professional wrestling. But it was much easier to run in the Central Maine area because, obviously at that point I did not have many connections that were in the southern half of the state. Primarily any events that I worked on, probably 75% of the events were from Central Maine up to Northern Maine. So, that was where I had any connections, where I was able to, you know, sell tickets from a certain, any like different stores, or we were able to get some news spots because we were friendly with the local news. So it just made more sense to run in Central Maine to start. Like, it just benefited us a lot, and it got us some publicity. So at that point, for throughout the first year, it just made a ton of sense to run Brewer and Orono, because close to home, I can do all the postering myself. Like, it really allowed me to, you know, do most everything myself. So then I only had myself to blame, essentially, but I also knew that things were getting done. So, we ended up growing, you know, we had some rough spots in there because obviously, like, you know, winter happens, you know, I hate running shows in the winter, man. I 100% do. It's so scary. But, we had two shows where we had, one was a major snowstorm. One was, you know, still a snowstorm that people don't want to drive in. And, we also had IWE, which is, you know, still running today, but they primarily run out of the Bangor Brewer area. So at that point, you know, you're getting some fans who are going to choose one or the other, because, you know, it's, Maine's also not a rich state. You know, it's you know, people are going to pick their, you know, one weekend of the month, and that's their time to enjoy pro wrestling. They're not always going to go to both shows. So I Central Maine, as much as it helped us, I think we did have some elements working against us, but it was, those are the cool kind of struggles to take into the first year and figure out how to really grow from them. But I had a lot of fun in Orono. It's such a cool building for wrestling. And we were there just over a year. And I think it really helped Limitless grow. Honestly, we had some real cool matches in there. And we did Chris Hero versus Zack Sabre Jr. on the third. I think it was the third show. And that was really the show where we appealed to an outside audience outside of the state of Maine, where it wasn't necessarily just this Central Maine thing anymore. We had people traveling in from New Hampshire and Massachusetts and Connecticut to come watch this match. So I think having that match as well helped us a lot get just extra visibility and people knowing the name Limitless Wrestling outside of the state.
Yeah, American Legion, post 84 Orono. I think I have drank there multiple times back when I was in college.
I bet you did.
And now to think that Zack Sabre and Chris Hero did battle there, that's pretty awesome. So when you, all right, so as you're kind of like setting up this whole thing, and you're kind of like figuring, all right, so you're a younger guy, you're trying to do this, you're trying not to completely lose your shirt on this and trying to do something impactful. Did you have kind of an idea? You must have had an idea in your mind, like, I want this to be like this as opposed to this. I would assume that was kind of, you had some sort of idea in your mind, right?
Yeah. It was just, you know, the shows in the state at the time were just rough. It was a lot of local talent who, you know, may not have been trained to the full extent, or just, you know, it was just rougher rosters, rougher feels to the show. Like, it's not a show that I would want to show somebody if they're watching pro wrestling for the first time, if that's a good way to put it. It's a local independent, small local independent, and that's all that was here.
Yeah.
And there'd be the occasional WWE that would come in twice a year, or maybe a big time wrestling who's like a touring promotion, but nothing major. And I've always been in love with that, just shows that feel crazy. Like, I don't know if there's a particular style that goes with it, but like, I love ECW, and like, I love PWG, and I love any shows that just, they create such an atmosphere of wild, crazy, you know, you never know what can happen. And, you know, I feel like we didn't really have an identity throughout that first year, because it was a lot of trial and error. Because when you're a smaller promotion and you don't necessarily have a buzz yet, it's very easy for guys to either pass up on those dates or take them and then pull off of them for a bigger opportunity. And we got a lot of that throughout the first year. So it was a lot of feeling out, you know, who our kind of core guys were going to be, and who we were going to really progress into year two with. And then, but just to kind of go back to the question, I really just wanted to be an alternative to the small independents that were locally. I wanted to kind of show people that, you know, pro wrestling can be really cool. Like, it's not just this small, like, mom and pop independent that, you know, I think a lot of wrestling fans locally thought that was the be all end all of independent wrestling that would ever come to Maine. And I never really wanted that to be the identity of pro wrestling in Maine, because there are, you know, there are talented people in this state, but there's so many talented people around New England too. And I really just wanted to build a platform for them to perform on, to create new stories, and really just, you know, again, just prove to people that wrestling can be really cool, especially on the independent level.
Yeah. And I think kind of what you're going for is that you know, for someone that's seen those touring shows in the state, like, you know, again, like, you have your old WWE star or something like that. And it's I think people probably understand what that is, but I think what those shows lack is a lot of energy. You know, it's kind of like traditional, here comes the baby face and grandma and grandpa, you know, cheer or clap or something like that. And the kids cheer. I think what you've achieved, at least from the one show I've seen, I think kind of what you're saying is you want energy. And I think a youthful energy of people, like, they're into the show and not just kind of like cheering just because that, you know, a baby face comes out. And I think, again, the show that I saw just a couple of weeks ago, I think you hit it. It's a small, intimate venue, but the people, it made it feel like so much bigger because people were into it. So I think that's probably what you're trying to achieve. And I think so far, so good.
And I appreciate that. But yeah, I think it's one of the big things that I look for too, when, like, building cards, for instance, is like, I always want to have something for everybody, because I know that, a lot of our fans are really into the Limitless Wrestling product. Like, they follow us, you know, they follow everything that we do. They follow all the videos we post. So the stories that we present, they're very intrigued and they're interested and they're 100% invested. But we also have the fans who, you know, I'll see them at a bar later that night, and we go off about how, you know, awesome The Rock is. Like, they're WWE, you know, fans for life, but they also, you know, they know that this is around, they know it's a fun night, so they're going to come enjoy it, have a few brews and have a good time. Like, there's a ton of different fans within the Limitless fan base, but I just want to hit everybody's tastes that they want. You know, there's so many different flavors of ice cream, and I think that if we can have cards that we put out that hit, you know, at least nearly everybody's taste in pro wrestling, I think that's a really cool card and a really cool product to present.
So also, you know, as you build these cards out, and you talk about some of the talent, some of the challenges, obviously, in the state, you know, you mentioned that lack of wrestling schools and you know, just kind of a deep bench to build from. But New England, as you, of course, you go a little bit further south and Boston area and so on, there's obviously that talent pool, you know, grows and grows and grows. So as you kind of have built out these cards over the past, you know, almost 3 years, you know, a lot of promoters in the past throughout the country and throughout the world probably have run into issues when they just try to load up with all these big name talents and, of course, big money talents from other places. And they kind of like, they don't have a good balance. And all of a sudden they're like, wow, how did I lose all this money on a show? Because you had all these people come in and, you know, perhaps maybe some of the locals didn't know who they were. And you're almost booking for yourself versus, you know, booking for trying to bring an audience in. But right. You seem to have had like a really nice balance with some New England talent, some lesser known talent, maybe some of your group that you're training and building up at your schools, and then also bring in a couple key names, but not like so overwhelming. How have you kind of like had to work with that balance over the past 3 years?
It's a tough balancing act because I think especially throughout that first year, it was the real realization of, you know, what you just talked about, what is booking for me and what is booking for the betterment of the product and the betterment of the show and the way to make money. Because, we're at a point now where there's a lot of different streams of revenue coming in, but the live gate is always still the most important for me. And I do think that some promoters they can get lost in, you know, booking for themselves and not understanding, you know, what's going to sell tickets, what's going to get people through the door, and what's going to have them enjoy a good night of pro wrestling. And I think that sucks because, like, you see a lot of promotions that'll pop up and they'll run these stacked shows and they'll expect to, you know, sell out a building of maybe 3,000 and they get maybe 100 and, they go away very quickly. But we've run into that a few times too, where promotions will pop up here and they'll announce these big shows. We had one just last year that pops up, announces all these big names, and they didn't even confirm the names, and then they canceled the show and didn't refund anybody any tickets. That's just going back to how, Maine wrestling gets a bad reputation, because that happens almost once a year. But going back, it's, I don't know. It's very interesting. It's almost like a science. It feels like to try to get it right, so to speak. Like sometimes I'll book someone who I don't necessarily expect to get the big reaction, but I know that their match will get that reaction once they're there. And sometimes I'm still surprised because, you know, I don't know what all of our fans are watching. I don't know what the outreach of performers, you know, 100% on the dot. But for instance, we booked Darby Allin. We had a situation last year where Teddy Hart had to be taken off of a show and I needed a last minute replacement. Those always suck to find because usually everybody's booked up. But I got Darby Allin last minute and I'm like, okay, you know, this is a risk because this is a flight guy, because I still look at everything like we're just having our first show. Like I budget everything right down. And, I really try to be thrifty if I can, and adding a last minute flight to a show really, really stinks, especially for, you know, I still think we're a smaller independent because I know what the money is and I know what comes in, comes out. So it sucks when we have to do something like that. So it was a risk to take because I didn't know how many people would know Darby Allin at that time. That was about a year ago. And it got a huge reaction that I didn't expect because I didn't know how many people had seen Darby Allin. So it's honestly really cool to kind of construct these cards and kind of think, okay, this guy is going to get a major reaction like when we announce him before we drop tickets. And I don't know if this guy is going to get a major reaction, but I know that his match is going to leave people wowed and he's going to be a good addition to the card. So I don't know if any of that makes sense. I went off on kind of a little tirade there, but
no, it completely makes sense. I think that's I think that's, you know, it's really on you to listen to those reactions, right? Not just assume, oh, they're fine. They're going to pop big. And then I think it's an important part for any group is to actually listen and get a sense of like what fans are saying, but also, you know, through social and through your YouTube channel and all these ways you can connect with fans. I think it's a big thing. It's like, you got to try to understand as best you can, what people are into. And then there are sometimes you're just gonna have to roll the dice and be like, well, let's bring this person in, see if they work and they fit within everything. And then sometimes you hit and then other times, maybe not as much, you know?
Yeah, and that's honestly, rolling the dice is honestly the coolest part about all of this because I'll give an example. One thing that I was trying to do throughout this year is really expand our YouTube account and really expand any social media outreach we could get. And one thing that I was thinking about earlier in the year that I tried throughout the year was, okay, maybe if I looked around kind of at different regions of the U.S. and, you know, who's big in Texas or who's big in California. And, that started our working relationship, just for an example, with Eli Everfly, who he's a California dude trained at Santino Bros in California, came up with the likes of Brody King, he was put over a ton to me by Brody and by Brett Lauderdale of GCW. So I took a chance on him earlier in the year. Now he's been up three times. He's a core roster member. And the whole idea behind it was, I really want to start to appeal to different fan bases across the country, because, you know, who knows where Limitless Wrestling could go. We just had our first show in Connecticut, and I didn't think we'd ever leave the state of Maine. I didn't really know, you know what I mean? Yep. It's always been small goals, one after another. So we've been in a position where we've, you know, I've had the option to say, okay, I can designate a flight this show to maybe bringing in someone new from some different region of the country, or maybe even a carload from a different region of the country, and bring them in, bring them to Limitless, have some kind of unique, really cool match. And maybe that appeals to some fans in their area, and they start watching Limitless Wrestling and following Limitless Wrestling. And maybe we build enough of a fan base somewhere that we are able to travel there and have a show there. But that's something extra to everything that I've been, you know, doing this year. And that, I think that's one of the coolest parts, is really bringing people in who may be a no name to your local crowd, and just seeing how they progress just throughout maybe an 8 to 10 minute match with your fan base.
Yeah. So one of the challenges that any promoter faces, and something you mentioned earlier about injuries. So this last show, we're talking about November 1, No Control in Portland. So you had really obviously a great card in paper leading into it, and then still turned out to be a great card, spoiler alert. But you had three injuries to key guys on the show, MJF, Tom Lawler, our own Tom Lawler, and then I'm blanking on the third one. Who's the
Marco Stunt.
Marco Stunt. That's right. That's right. So, you know, I don't think people really kind of understand this part of the business. So all of a sudden you're sitting there being like, okay, I have to replace one guy. May not be as bad. It's a challenge, but you know, it's tough. But all of a sudden you have two and three, and you're trying to keep a high quality show. Guys are booked other places. What is your procedure, I guess, so to speak, as far as like, how do you go about filling those slots?
Honestly, this is like worst case scenario stuff. And we had a similar situation in March of this year where we had, I think it was Joey Janela, David Starr, and Fred Yehi get pulled from a card in March within like a week. So it's the biggest bummer in the world, because like, especially when it's bigger names like this that I know that people were looking forward to seeing, Tom Lawler and Marco Stunt, it was both of their debuts in Limitless Wrestling. And MJF just returned to Limitless Wrestling, so people were excited to see him as well. It's a big bummer, but one of the cool things is like we do have a very understanding fan base that is not like that everywhere. And obviously there will be, you know, one or two people who come at us as if it's our fault, which injuries are something that you can never help. You know, they're a worst case scenario situation, not only for a booker of pro wrestling, but for the talent as well, because to my knowledge, you know, that's what, you know, the three of them do for a job. So now, you know, they can't work for who knows how long. I know Marco Stunt's going to be out for quite some time, but at that point, it's just damage control. It's, you know, MJF was the rough one because that was the main event. Tom Lawler and Marco Stunt, you know, I had some ideas, but at that point, it's just, you know, kind of going through your phone and thinking, okay, you know, I know what shows are running to, you know, on the same date as well. So you can kind of rule out some people who, you know, are already booked. And then you just kind of work from there. Luckily we were running with Blitzkrieg the next day. They had DJZ booked. I get a hold of DJZ. He was, by the graces of God, somehow had a Friday open. We were able to snag him. And then from there, it's really just, it's very tough to get, you know, the same level of talent that goes down, especially when it's so close to the show. I think we had, when Tom Lawler was out, I think we had like 4 days remaining until the show. So DJZ was a very lucky get. And then from there, with Marco Stunt, I really just kind of sat down and think, what would be a cool replacement here? And Kyle the Beast made a lot of sense, because KTB was who Marco Stunt had his really his coming out party at Joey Janela's loss in New York earlier in the year against. So he made a lot of sense there. And then the main event was the big question, because I actually tried to get Sami Callihan to replace MJF, but I was unable to do that. We ended up pulling Brody King out of the scramble. And then Bear Bronson, who was a Creative Pro student with Brian Myers, he was making the trip up. So it's one of those deals where somebody was coming to show face, help out, and he ended up getting a spot. So sometimes, you know, we make the best of it the best we can. We got lucky this time with DJZ, but it obviously doesn't happen that way all the time.
And I heard you mention on the Limitless podcast Limitless podcast talking about the next day, being that Saturday show in Connecticut, that you got bit by the PCO bug, that I think it's hit a lot of other promotions around the same time. And luckily you were able, by complete serendipity, Ace Romero, he of the infamous, one of the best gifts of the year, the pounce where he just knocks a guy completely out of the ring. He worked a show on Friday against Darby Allin, which was a really just the first time I had ever seen either guy in person. It was incredible. Such a visual, complete difference and whatever. So, but he happened to miss his flight the next day. And so PCO was out, and all of a sudden, by the grace of God, Ace Romero was able to slide right in and work that show for you.
Yeah, that was awesome that it worked out that way. Obviously, you know, super bummed that that we lost PCO on that day, but I'm super excited for him because, you know, what a story it's been for PCO this year to now get signed by Ring of Honor. Absolutely crazy. So super happy for him because, honestly, one of the best dudes going right now in wrestling. But we got super lucky. I woke up on Danger Kid's floor the next day to like three or four messages from Ace Romero, who was like, his Uber broke down to the airport, and he literally had no way to get to the airport. So I'm like, well, brother, I think I got something for you tonight. Now, if you want to ride with me to Connecticut. And sure enough, he ended up wrestling Jeff Cannonball, had a heck of a match there, but that was another situation where we got, you know, that was super lucky that happened that way. Obviously, like, you know, there's a lot of cases where, you know, there will be pull-offs, you know, week of or even day of show where it's just literally impossible to figure out a scenario, or it's impossible due to funds because, you know, sometimes if you're looking at getting somebody and getting a last minute flight, it's just impossible to do. You just can't do it. So sometimes, you know, situations, they don't happen. They don't fall into place as nicely as this, you know, this weekend did for us, but we got pretty lucky all around.
Yeah. And you mentioned, on the podcast that Brody King told you that night that it was going to be his last date with you because he had signed with Ring of Honor, and obviously PCO signed Ring of Honor. And, you know, the landscape in 2019, I think everyone expects it to change again, depending on what happens with this Young Bucks Cody promotion. If this thing happens, obviously WWE trying to sign every single person possible in the old world, feels like. And obviously you have Impact looking to sign people, MLW. You just have it's almost like an arms race for people to kind of sign their own talent because everyone's trying to get their own content deals. Meanwhile, you have guys like yourself just trying to put on good shows, and it's going to be a challenge in the year ahead. For those that don't really know and aren't involved in the business side, what are you thinking about this year ahead and some of those challenges and kind of how you work around them?
I'm honestly pretty excited, and I don't think a ton of promoters share that sentiment with me, but I'm quite excited because it's really going to force every promoter, every booker of professional wrestling to get more creative this year. And I really think that we're going to see one of those resurgences of new talent throughout 2019. I wouldn't even say new talent, but talent who is now going to have the opportunity to get on bigger stages and break out, because we are going to see WWE keep signing people. It's inevitable. They're going to do it. MLW is now, I don't believe any MLW contracts are exclusive, you know, just to MLW, but they're signing people. Evolve is signing people. Ring of Honor. It's really cool because now, you know, the opportunity is there for independent wrestlers to get more contracts and make more of a living off pro wrestling, which is awesome. But it's also going to be really cool for fans, because especially fans of Limitless, because I'm looking at this year, like, you know, there could be, you know, 5, 6, 7 people who are like core Limitless roster members who I would not be surprised get a contract in 2019. And if they do, awesome. Who's the next man up? Because that's going to be the story of this year. Is who's the next man up? Who's the next woman up? Who's going to take new promotions by storm? And I think it's going to be really cool, but it's also going to be really challenging because The big names who have really solidified themselves on the independents. You know, we do try every show to have a couple big names on the independent scene, or maybe even some former WWE talent on every show. It is going to be tougher to get those people because a lot of those people are getting contracts, or they're getting more overseas tours. So it'll be very interesting, but I'm excited because I do think that we've just built up some really unique stories and some really unique talent in Limitless Wrestling that people have really gravitated to. So it's kind of cool looking back now, you know, 3 years ago on some of our first shows. You know, I look at a guy like Anthony Green, who was a last minute replacement on our first ever Limitless show. And now he's what I would consider a top guy in Limitless Wrestling, a guy who people want to see on every show. And they're pretty upset if he's not on the show. So I don't know. All around, I think it's going to be a very fun, creative, and just a new feel to professional wrestling this year, and especially independent wrestling.
It's funny you mentioned Anthony Green, because I was going to ask you about him and specifically his match in November at the No Control show. So I am I'm 40 years old, so I am an old school fan, like 80s, you know, traditional, came up through WWF and WCW and NWA and ECW and so on and so forth. So I kind of view wrestling in a certain way. Obviously, I love what's happening on the indie scene and with just all these different promotions. I think it's awesome. And obviously, working for the site, you just hear about these names, see these matches, and so on. It's great. One thing it is tough for me to get into, and Anthony was part of this, was intergender matches. So you had Ashley Vox versus Anthony Green at this last show, and you've had other intergender matches throughout the course of your time. I believe Beyond Wrestling out of Connecticut, if I remember right, is they're pretty heavily into them. And it's kind of Lucha Underground. It's kind of this thing of, like, I feel like either people really like it or they really don't like it. And for whatever reason, I can't get into it, even though that, you know, that there's the talent is there and everything. I don't know. I just don't get it. Maybe it's just because I'm a little bit older and how I came up with watching wrestling is different. But if you, like, I guess, talk to me about your decision to push intergender wrestling on these shows, and then am I just an old fuddy-duddy or what?
No, so I totally understand what you're saying, because if we really break it down, it's a man hitting a woman, which is, you know, disgusting. If we really want to break that down, and that's how some people view it, and they don't look further, and that's fine, because I do totally understand that portion of thought and of viewing of what's being presented. However, I 100% believe that intergender wrestling presented well. I don't want to say correctly, because there's no correct way to do it, but intergender wrestling presented well is so cool. Because there's so many different stories that you can tell. Obviously, like, you can see some intergender matches, and I'm sure, you know, everyone or anyone who's really dipped into intergender wrestling has probably seen a pretty bad one that just feels uncomfortable. I think it's all about presentation. And I think we've had quite a few, honestly, because I really enjoy intergender wrestling. Equal rights, equal fights is something that we say all the time. Awesome. I just think there's really cool aspects to everything that you can do. And especially Lucha Underground, kind of taking it that one step forward where they're putting it on national television, which really has not been done before in the U.S., or at least not to the extent that they are doing it. It's just, I don't know, it's really, really cool right now, because there's a ton of super talented female performers on the independent scene. And honestly, a lot of girls who we bring in come to me and they say, you know, if you have anything intergender, like, I am 100% not opposed. I would love to do it. I don't know. I think it's just really cool. Obviously, we do get some backlash sometimes because there are people who don't like it, especially when we're doing it in Orono, because it is a different crowd than Portland.
say some, the least. Yeah.
People,
yeah.
Yeah. Some people were, you know, they were kind of taken aback that we were doing that. But I honestly love to sit and have conversations with people and kind of pick their brain of what they don't like. And I honestly think intergender wrestling, if you just sit down and explain it with somebody and then, you know, show them a pretty, you know, a good independent a good intergender wrestling match. I think people can be swayed, because I think the stories that can be told within those matches are really cool. I think Anthony Green and Ashley Vox had a banger of an intergender wrestling match at No Control, but I totally understand your viewpoint. I think going into certain situations with an open mind about it can definitely help for people who are not sold on intergender wrestling. But again, I do think it's all about presentation, because there can be situations where it does seem uncomfortable.
Yeah. And for me, it wasn't the man hitting a woman thing, because I think I was able to kind of take myself out of that part. Just for some, you know, with my, how I view wrestling, especially, you know, a lot of the other matches that night, and just in general, is like, I think with all of us, like, we just love to get lost in it, you know, and yeah, lost in the 100%. Moment. And for whatever reason, my brain just couldn't shut off that portion of it. But I mean, look, both of them worked hard. The crowd was going nuts, and I was just kind of fascinated, just kind of looking around, just watching, and just kind of just gauging what people were thinking. Everyone was like super into it, popping big, standing up, and all that. It was, so it definitely wasn't like a thumbs down or anything like that. That was actually, I think, my first full intergender match that I've watched, actually, at this point. First one definitely live. And just for whatever reason, yeah, I was curious about that, just because, again, with the way that, you know, promotion, you don't see that in a lot of indie promotions. And I say good on you for, yeah, taking a chance with it and bringing it to places that have never really seen this before, and giving it a shot. You know, I think, again, it's part of rolling the dice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly love when people ask questions about it, because and to do a comparison, I think it'd be different if we did like Ace Romero versus Ashley Vox.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's an aspect of the presentation. Anthony Green, I think everything within this match was super believable, and it's a massive win for Ashley Vox. Anthony Green was actually undefeated in Limitless Wrestling for 2.5 years. So almost like a crowning achievement there for Ashley Vox that night. But yeah, I just think it goes back to presentation. I understand what you're saying. It can be difficult to definitely lose yourself in that moment, because there are, you know, different aspects of you thinking, you know, why this instead of this? You know what I mean?
A couple more to round the bend with. Decision to do no titles. And I know, obviously, a lot of promotions, they may be like, okay, we have to have championships and so on and so forth. But you... unless I'm missing something, you guys don't have any championships or titles at all, right?
We do not. The only thing that we have that is relatively close is we have an annual Vacation Land Cup that we do every July. They get a big Vacation Land Cup trophy, and they also get to select their opponent for the main event of our anniversary show, which is every September.
Gotcha.
So that is the only thing. But the whole idea behind that is I've always felt like, especially in the state, I think that's another thing that has stuck with me since my upbringings, I would say, is I always saw championships used as a crutch by bookers and promotions locally, and not even just Maine. I think it's been a lot of places where it's just, you know, the stories may not necessarily be as good because there's a championship to rely on. So they'll throw a championship in there to make a match or make a story feel important. And I don't know if it's like a pride thing for me. I honestly don't know, but I've never really wanted to have that, because I always want to really have people invest in the product, the wrestlers there, and the stories that we're presenting without a championship crutch, without anything to make it seem more important than it actually is. Like, I actually want people investing in the stories and the people, and not necessarily the hardware that goes along with everything.
Yeah. And to that point, I didn't even think of it until after the show, and the stories were really the stakes, right? I mean, the whole, MJF with the King's angle with, you know, the, just every, like, throughout up and down the card again. And I hadn't been that necessarily plugged into the product, and especially seeing live for the first time, it didn't take me that long to really kind of understand what was going on. And I think that's you made it very, the entry points were really easy. And to your point, there really was no need for a championship match, you know, a main event for the title, or, you know, for the main event to be for a tag team titles or anything like that. Cause I think people, that could take people out of it as well. Cause they know that realistically, you know, LAX is not going to stay around. So if they were going to fight for, you know, the tag team titles with you know, local guys, they know that, okay, they're probably not going to win here. So that can kind of also work against you too. So I think it's a really smart move.
And to that point, that's also why we don't do a lot of outside title matches at Limitless as well, because I was always that kid who would sit there and say, okay, if they're, for instance, we've had a couple House of Glory championship matches at Limitless shows very early on. And, I was always a kid when I was, you know, sitting in independent shows where another promotion's belt would come to this promotion. I know damn well they're not losing that belt at this other promotion. You know what I mean?
Right.
I never wanted that feel to come with it too. But I don't know. I never say never because, you know, obviously things can change, you know, years progress somewhere down the road. It could happen, but there's no immediate plans as of right now. And it's honestly very refreshing to hear you say that you understood, you know, kind of what was going on very early, because that's what I hope to do, because I know that we have, you know, some casual fans, especially when we run in Portland, who will stroll in off the street just to see what's going on. And I always hope that, you know, everything really comes off at least clean to people and they can kind of understand what's going on, but that's good to hear.
And let's see, final question. So people that listen to this show, and I guarantee there's people listening to this who have thought about booking an indie promotion, working for one, starting their own group. I think it crosses every wrestling fan's mind at one point or another. And we were just talking to someone last night and about that they're going to maybe booking their own thing coming up here next year and so on. So from someone that has done this for 3+ years, and you know, obviously for you know people listening to this conversation know kind of like philosophies and all that, how would you give advice? You know, what are some of the key lessons you learned both in the positive and the negative for someone starting out doing this?
I would definitely say if you're gonna start out doing this, definitely don't let booking a show be your first kind of soiree into pro wrestling. I would definitely suggest at least, you know, hopping on a ring crew and just like hanging out at some and helping at any other shows like local around you, just kind of get a feel for the business and what you're kind of getting into with everything, because I've seen people who are, you know, best of intentions. You know, they just want to do something really fun, really different, really cool. And then pro wrestling can easily just suck the life out of them, because promoting and booking shows is super hard. And there's just a lot of different aspects to it that I think a lot of people don't realize. But really, one of the biggest things for me is just continue to have fun. If you're doing this for the first time, obviously you have to let yourself get lost into the business portion of this, or else you're not going to make money. And that is what, you know, the be all end all is not to lose money so you can keep being a business. But don't ever lose the aspect of fun in all of this, because, you know, I have to sit back sometimes and understand, you know, when I'm frustrated, when I really don't want to do anything, because there's just, you know, when you're promoting, booking shows, especially if you're doing both, you're dealing with talent, you're dealing with travel, you're dealing with buildings, insurance, chair rentals, anything possible you can think of that goes into a show, you're dealing with it all most of the time. Don't let yourself get sucked in so far that you miss the reason that you're doing it in the first place. You miss the reason that you're having fun with this, or you're really trying to change something, or you want to make a revolution, or whatever you want to do. Don't lose that initial, you know, pull that really pulls you into the wrestling business, because that can keep you going for a long time. And I think that's important to keep.
Good advice. That's actually really great advice. Limitless Wrestling returns Friday, January 11th, Westbrook, Maine, not too far outside of Portland, Maine, for those in the New England area. Big main event, Ace Romero, Anthony Green. We just talked about those guys teaming up against JT Dunn and the aforementioned MJF returning back to action. Chris Statlander, the alien, taking on Ashley Vox. Unsanctioned match for anyone that has not seen it or will be seeing some of the promos for this. You'll see the intensity these two have for each other. They hate each other. It's finally going to boil over here at in Westbrook on January 11th. Also, Andrew Everett coming in, Ophidian, and what else do we have to promote here?
We've got Simon Grimm on the card as well, former NXT Tag Team Champion. We've also got a tag team match that could change Kevin Blackwood's appearance forever. It's the dream team of Christian Casanova and Austin Theory versus Kevin Blackwood and Harlow O'Hara. If Kevin Blackwood and Harlow lose this match, Kevin Blackwood has to get a dream team logo tattoo on his left bicep. And that would happen right there at the arena. We have a tattoo artist coming in the traveling set. However, if Kevin Blackwood and Harlow are victorious, he'll get his singles match with Christian Casanova, the rematch he's wanted since September, and Stokely Hathaway will be banned from ringside. So we'll see what happens there. Tickets are available on limitlesswrestling.com/tickets. Any info available on the website, limitlesswrestling.com, or you can go to facebook.com/limitlesswrestling. Hit going on the event page. All the notifications, any talent announcements are right there for you.
And of course, YouTube. And you guys do really great job putting out a ton of matches on YouTube with all types of different talents. Again, some of the local talents, New England talents, also some bigger names as well. So yeah, YouTube, you guys are killing it. So do you keep doing that at Limitless Wrestling on YouTube. Easy to search there.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's we try to at least put up a video every single day. So there's a ton of free content on there. There's actually full shows at this point. So if you want to sit down, just watch through a full show. There's playlists for every single show that we've ever had. Plus, there's a Let's Wrestle playlist for our secondary promotion in Orono. So anything that you want to watch that we do, head over to youtube.com/limitlesswrestling. Hit the subscribe button, then you can get a notification anytime that we post something that you can check out.
And I forgot to ask about the wrestling school. You have a wrestling school in Brewer that's been opened up earlier this year. Is that right? Or has it been a year plus now?
Only a month.
Only a month. Boy.
Yeah. We opened November 1st. We have a wrestling school opened up in Brewer. It's about 2 minutes off of I-395. So very easy to get to. Any information on that as well, it's all available on the website. LimitlessWrestling.com is a training section, and it actually has all the information for you, and you can actually fill out a little form, and it sends right to my email, so we can chat about any specifics you want to know with it. But yeah, we do classes about 3 or 4 times a week. We're still in the ground stages, so it's very much we go week by week with what the students are available for. But super fun to get that on the road. To my knowledge, it's the only year-round functioning school right now in the state of Maine, so I hope it stays that way. I hope we can keep doing this, and I'd love to get some new people into the school, because it's super fun to see how quick already within a month that the students are progressing.
Yep, and you get the podcast as well, talking about the recent shows, upcoming shows with John Alba, who is a local sports guy, and then he moved to Orlando, I think, or something along those lines, right?
Yeah, 100% correct. John Alba was actually very integral in our growth early on, because he got us on the news a lot for the local Fox affiliate. And now he's doing his thing out in Orlando now, but we still do have the podcast, the Limitless Wrestling Podcast, available anywhere that you get your podcast from. And we pretty much any show that we have, we do preview shows and review shows of them. And then we go back and we interview some talent on the roster. We talk about some previous shows. So if you ever want to get caught up on anything going on in Limitless Wrestling, that's the place to do it.
And I got to say, I'm proud of you guys being a 207 alumni and living just a short distance from there now. And again, being an alumni of the EWA, I am so glad that a real promotion is killing it in the state and doing great things, getting good buzz and all that stuff, man. You deserve all the success that you're getting right now. And best of luck in the future, man. Although CM Punk always says luck is for losers, but I will say best of luck to you in the future, and looking forward to talking to you in the year ahead.
Thank you, man. Absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
All right. Big thanks to Randy Carver for stopping by. That was a fun talk. I could have talked to him about a ton more stuff and probably do so at a different time. But again, if you're in New England, if you're in the greater Portland area, even if you don't mind taking the drive. I mean, one of the things we didn't get to is like my little state here, New Hampshire, where I live now, there's like zero wrestling. There's like nothing. WWE comes to the Verizon Wireless Arena, or the former Verizon Wireless Arena, the Snooze Center. They go there once a year, I think, maybe twice a year. And there's not a lot else going on. They don't even really have MMA here outside for Combat Zone, which is a smaller promotion. So the state is just kind of like, it's really weird. We're really close to Boston, about an hour outside as far as the major population centers, but there's just not a lot of spillover. It seems like we always have to go down and visit somewhere else. But Limitless is about an hour away when they run shows in Portland and Westbrook area. So yeah, I invite you guys to stop up and go check them out. It's really fascinating stuff. You get to obviously meet, they do the typical signatures and meet and greet stuff during the middle of the show, VIP sessions. And yeah, I hope Tom Lawler makes it out this way one day. And I assume that he will as soon as everything heals up, because they were definitely looking forward to having him come in. And I'd be looking forward to actually meeting him after him, working for the site for so long and talking to him and all that stuff. So hopefully it'll happen at one point as well. But yeah, hopefully you enjoyed that look at the indie scene. And I've been thinking about doing a few other ones of these throughout the course of time, and I have a couple ideas. Perhaps I'll come open that up a little bit more here in 2019 is coming up in just like 3 weeks. Good transition to talking about last week's show, which I did the Best of MMA Part 1 with Paul Fontaine. We went through January, February, and March. And my expectations is next week we will have part two in that series talking about April, May, and June with a very special guest. I believe a first-time guest, if I can get everything confirmed. So I'm looking forward to that. And let's see. Also next week, scheduled to be on the show. He had to cancel out this week due to some other commitments, but is due to be back on the show next Wednesday, is Guy Evans. He, of the book I'm holding in my right hand, I've talked about for ad nauseum for months, Nitro. Nitro, the incredible rise and inevitable collapse of Ted Turner's WCW, a near 600-page book. Listen to let's see if you can hear this. That's the book hitting the desk. That's how heavy this thing is. I finished it, and I'm really looking forward to talking about it because I really enjoyed it. So next week, we're scheduled to have Guy Evans on the program, and we'll talk all about that. So that's about it. Have a great weekend. Enjoy. If you're into the fights, I have not really delved too deep into this UFC Milwaukee card. There's two Bellator shows. Apparently, that lightweight title fight between Michael Chandler and Brett Primus is on Friday night. There's so much MMA. It's tough to kind of gauge who is where and what and everything, but there's a ton going on this weekend again. And yeah, some UFC, and now we're coming up here on the bend with John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson coming at the last week of the year. Holloway and Ortega, I can't add anything more to the fight than everyone else has. It was amazing, really fun, awesome fight. Holloway just, proved me and a lot of other people wrong and just took care of business in a big way. A lot of exciting things for him ahead. I still have actually not seen the Shevchenko in Jacek fight. I knew the result afterward and I said, okay, I'm going to go back and watch it at some point, but I was kind of catching up on some of the other stuff. So I still have to watch that at some point. But yeah, Shevchenko really doesn't do that much for me. I heard a lot of talk about that this week, so we'll kind of see, but that'll be safe for another time. But yeah, a lot of stuff going on and no shortage of things to watch. And especially if you're into like watching Christmas specials and your two-year-old's into watching Christmas specials and wants to watch Rudolph and the wife wants to spend time, and holiday season is very tough if you just want to sit on your ass and watch TV for 4 hours. So for those of you out there making it happen, God bless you. So to Randy Carver and all Limitless Wrestling, thank you very much for stopping by. And thanks to all you for stopping by. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and I appreciate you spending time with me or any of the fine podcasters here on our website. And all new subscribers, welcome as well. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. I am Josh Nason. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.